Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. The September 1st primary is fast approaching. State Representative Randy Hunt has decided after 10 years representing the 5th Barnstable District not to seek re-election. There are two candidates seeking the Republican nomination in the general election. They are Thomas Keyes and Stephen Xeros, who join us today. It's unfortunate we can't be in studio together, but happy to have you both join us on the phone. Welcome.
Awesome. Good morning, Mindy. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Thanks for having us, Mindy. We really appreciate the opportunity.
And listeners, if you have a question on the issues, you'd like to know where the candidates stand, our number is 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Again, we ask that you pose your question to both candidates. Our format is up to 2 minutes to answer questions on the issues facing the district, and we will have 2 minutes for closing statements at the end of the hour. We'll start with you, Tom Keyes. Why do you want to represent the 5th Barnstable District, and what skills do you bring to the table?
Well, the skills are, you know, over the last 20 years as a former two-term selectman, two-term on the county level, as well as endless boards and committees from water quality all the way through economic development. I think I understand the district intimately. I have been very involved. I have helped the district in regards to keeping taxes low. I was the first sponsor of a Proposition 2.5 underwrite back in the mid-2000s because as we were getting overtaxed. I'm also I'm a businessman. I've been in private practice for 22 years. I work with businesses and organizations to streamline their processes to do more with less or produce a better product. That's my background. That's what I do, and I think we really need it. But things have changed halfway through this campaign, which started last year. The COVID situation, we now are looking at somewhere between a $3 and $6 billion deficit in the 2021 budget. That goes right into what I do. Plus, we're looking at a 17.5% unemployment. That's historic. We need someone with business background to understand businesses to get this turned around.
All right. Thank you. Stephen Xeros, same question. Why do you want the job, and what do you bring to the table?
It's all about people, and that's what I've done for 40 years. I've lived a lifetime of public service, 40 years of policing. I've raised a family. And I try to keep people safe. And for me, it's a lot of things. It's to stand up for businesses. It's to, you know, make sure our schools and our parents and the children are safe. And a lot of things. But really, it's right now, the way the country is, safety is very important, including the COVID, including the opioid crisis and things that are happening. The country is in a tough place. And it takes strong leadership to make a difference for the people of our district. You know, the 5th Barnstable District is a very special district. It's about 40,000 people that I want to work for and I want to take care of. And one of the reasons why is the murder of Sean Gannon. It had a big impact on me. You know, I sent those police officers on that mission. And 3 hours later, they were calling for help. And I arrived on the scene, and I saw, you know, the wounded police officers. I saw the injured canine narrow. And that should never have happened. So we have to get tougher on criminals that are career criminals like that man. And we need to take a strong stand to protect our safety. And those are some of the reasons why I'm running and who I am.
Right. Where you have the phone right now, Steve, is best. We can hear you. Yeah, I was having a little bit of crackle there, but towards the end there, you had the phone placed just right. All right, Steve, we're going to start with you this time. What are your thoughts on the police reform bill that's ongoing at the State House now? We have sort of two different proposals coming from the State Senate and the House. Do you think reform is needed? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a great opportunity to make a difference in policing. You know, I'm not reading about it. I've lived it. I've lived 40 years or more being a police officer. It's all about being a public servant. It's all about taking care of people. It doesn't matter, you know, if they're Republicans or Democrats or independents, they're people from all types of races. And we as police want to do the best job we can. And we've been asking for more training. We've been asking to be certified like most other states. But it fell on deaf ears, and the death of George Floyd was horrible. It made me sick watching that 10-minute video. And I think that's, in a way, it inspired others to make a difference. And what the House and the Senate proposed was too much and off base, but there's some good to it. So I think it's good that we're looking at it. I think there's a great committee right now trying to bring everything together. And that's right up my alley. You know, our police officers are human beings. They're our neighbors. They do what they do because they want to help people. And we should do everything we can to make sure they're well-trained, to make sure they're well-equipped, to make sure the laws are there to help them, and to make sure they're doing their job. They need to be held fully accountable. We have a lot of power. You have the power to take someone's freedom. You have the power to take someone's life. And when you give that to a human, you've got to make sure you have the right person. So I think the reform is good. It depends on what it is. And I'm working with Chief Fredrickson and the chiefs here on the Cape to make sure it's done correctly.
Thank you. Tom Keyes, same question.
Thank you, Mindy. You know, this is a big issue. You know, we call it the police reform bill, but it goes much further than that. What's not being talked about enough is we're looking at, we're looking at fire, we're looking at EMTs, we're looking at teachers, nurses, we're looking at all the municipal employees that can be affected by, you know, in regards to immunity and other issues. These are people that have situations that arise. A teacher in a classroom has 20 people where if one child's looking to do harm, the teacher has to do something to stop harm from continuing. And they have to act very quickly based on the great training that they've received. And if we're going to have them think about how they're going to act, more harm's going to happen. And you think about the EMTs or the firefighters that have to extract people out of a car or a situation. Sometimes they're going to create a problem that it was because they're looking to save lives and control a situation where innocent people can get hurt. You've got to be very careful. Yes, we should always look for reform, but I believe our officers know what they're doing, and we shouldn't be taking a knee-jerk reaction to this. We need to understand that the law of unintended consequences can hurt the society even further. So I really hope that the Senate and the House can come together and come with something, but we also need the police officers to weigh in on this bill.
All right, thank you. Tom Keyes, we start with you this time. You both say you would like to control or even reduce taxes. How will you work to keep a balanced budget that doesn't cut local aid and school funding and an uneven economy that we have in the COVID-19 pandemic? Tom?
Right, I think that's probably the most important question you could ask. We're looking at a serious deficit in 2021. So we need people that have had the experience, like myself, looking at budgets, looking at all the line items, and understanding where certain cuts are going to have to happen. We're going to have to really hold the line, especially this year. It's difficult every year without the COVID, but with the COVID, it becomes even more problematic. That's where my background is. But where are we going to have to cut? Well, we spend $1.8 billion annually on people that are in this state illegally on their services. $1.8 billion, that's every year. So if we're looking at a $3 to $6 billion shortfall, we need to really start getting tough on people that are not here contributing to our society. That is first and foremost where we need to make some real reform and some real changes. And then we need to grow the economy. I'm the only candidate that has a plan for growing the economy. Look, I put together a small business bill of rights, which allows businesses to be able to apply to the local Board of Health so that they can actually open up their business. We shouldn't just have Boston saying every business must be closed when you're looking at, you know, some companies can sell a shirt, but other businesses can't sell in the same shirt. We need better controls. Anyway, that's my background. Let's build the economy. Let's control our costs. And let's make sure that the citizens of Cape Cod, well, the district in Massachusetts, are making sure that their tax dollars are being used in the most expedient way.
All right. Stephen Exero, same question.
Great question. Difficult times. We need to start out by not raising taxes and look at everything. Take a long, good look at every item in the budget. Almost redo the budget because these times have put us in such a different way, and stand up for our local businesses and make sure they get what they need to be successful, like we did when we, you know, called out Governor Baker to ask him to open the businesses locally before Memorial Day, and then again before July 4th. They're the lifeblood of our district, and the balanced budget obviously is for the state, and we have to be very careful, but we should not raise taxes. That's kind of the easy way out, and our people pay enough taxes. We got to look at what's out there, be tough, and support our local businesses like I have done by meeting with them face-to-face, which is difficult during COVID times, but we did, listening to their concerns, and calling out, you know, Governor Baker, who is a Republican, when he should hear from people. You know, we're not, he's not our boss. We represent our people, and he's done a very good job on the difficult situation. But I think it's important that he hears from both sides. We're not looking for yes men or women. We're looking for people that will fight for us to keep our economy strong, balance the budget without raising taxes.
It's a really difficult time to be campaigning. It's so tough to, you know, meet people face to face and, you know, have the coffees and things that you would normally be doing. And I know you both are trying to reach out and get, you know, feedback from your constituents. Stephen, let's start with you. Stephen Exeros, what are you hearing from people as you're going around as their biggest concerns?
I love talking to people. That's one of my things as a police officer, and it's all kinds of people. And, you know, 40 years of policing, I never ask someone, are you a Democrat or a Republican or an independent? You just help them. But, yeah, this has been different. I mean, I've never run a campaign before. I like to go out and have coffees and meet people. So what we're doing this way, we do a lot on the phone. We do a lot in social media. But I go out face-to-face using, you know, masks and being careful, like I was yesterday morning on the canal. And you ask the locals, what do you think? And some of their big concerns are taxes. It's a huge issue, especially in Sandwich. The opioid crisis. I know a lot of parents that have children struggling with this horrible addiction. And another topic that's a big one is the bridges. You know, we're going to have two brand new bridges, and that affects Sandwich and Barnstable and all of us, Bourne especially, you know, more than we may know. If you live in Bourne, I've met with those residents. They go over that bridge 10 or 20 times a day. So taxes is always a big one. Our safety is another big one. And that's what that, you know, ties in the opioid crisis. There's too many career criminals selling drugs. They need to be in jail. And they also talk about transparency. They want to know that you're a good person and that you have integrity. And I do.
Tom Keyes, same question. What are you hearing from folks as you're going around?
You know, campaigning definitely has changed, and it's all social media, and it's all phone calls, and it's all day, every day. But, those are great issues, but everybody now is talking about the economy. Everyone. That is the number one problem. Right now, we have a huge unemployment. We have businesses. For instance, the governor just takes a broad brush and shuts down all kinds of industries. Yet in areas that possibly the COVID's not as big an issue. You get a restaurant called Isaac's down in Plymouth. It is a staple. It's a landmark, and it's gone. It's not closed this year. It's gone. It's done. Now, that one business has many employees, and when they get their tips, they go out and expend it all over the economy. $100 can move around the town in a matter of a couple of hours and be thousands of dollars of transactions by the time the day's over. That's gone. They're not going to get these jobs back. We got one, and that's just one example. Look at Puritan Clothing in Hyannis. It's been closed the whole time while Target's on the same shirt. How is that fair? No, I don't believe Beacon Hill has done a great job of this because, you know, we're not the city of Boston. We should be able to open up our businesses with safe practices like those other organizations have. But everybody's talking about the economy, and that's my background. I've worked with a lot of businesses and a lot of organizations. I understand budgets. I know how to make this work, and I know this district as well as anybody.
been in it for 20 years, and I've worked very hard to understand the people, and they know me. And they know I'm going to work very hard on taxes and the economy. We need to get this back on track.
You're listening to The Point. We are talking with the Republican candidates for state representative in the 5th Barnstable District. Primary coming up September 1st. The candidates are Stephen Xeros and Thomas Keyes. 866-999-4626. If you have a question on the issues that you'd like to pose to the candidates, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Stephen Xeros, your turn to go first. You both advocate for the Cape regarding the bridge replacement. How do you see your role as stewards or advocates now that the state will be taking control of the bridges? Stephen?
Right at the tip of it, these are critical to the lifeblood and safety of Cape Cod. Obviously, tourism, people have to come over the bridges, and your state rep should be right on top of it. And that's what I've been doing. I've been speaking with Randy Hunt. He's been in the middle of it for the last 10 years. And it's actually going to happen. And I support it. I support that we need the new bridges. Those bridges were built in the, you know, designed in the 1920s and built in the 30s. Things have changed since then. So they look beautiful and they're kind of iconic, but they need to be wider. They need to be safer. The federal government's going to pay $1 billion, not a million, a billion. And then we'll maintain them afterwards. And some people think that may be a little controversial, but it is what it is. My job is to make sure it's done right. I have people that live in Bourne, that live in Sandwich. I call them my little bridge ambassadors, and they live right there. And it's going to affect them because it may take away a road. So how you get on the bridge and off and how it affects everything else in that area is huge. And your state rep, me, hopefully, will be right on top of that. You have to have a loud voice. You have to work with others, which is one of my strengths. It's not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's about getting things done. But one thing that has to make sure that there's no tolls on those bridges, and I'll fight to make sure that doesn't happen.
All right, Tom Keyes, same question.
You know, I grew up with these bridges. I've worked Buzzard Bay, I worked Sandwich when I was in school. I understand the infrastructure. I go over them every single day when I'm going off to clients. And I know the traffic patterns. But I also know that this state is not good at maintenance. If you look at what we spend in maintenance, we are dramatically higher than everyone else. Those bridges have been very well maintained for a long time under the federal government. They're probably a couple of the best maintained bridges in the Commonwealth. We're now going to turn it over to the state. Now, I don't think anybody thinks the state has a great highway system when we got some maintenance. We have problems. We got to make sure that when the federal government comes in and puts new bridges in, that the state also has an agreement for maintenance, something that has to be adhered to, that has some teeth to it. Because the last thing we want to have is in 30 years, 40 years, they say, oh, these bridges are falling apart. These bridges have lasted since the 1930s, and they're still operational. We don't want to get into a situation where we have to keep replacing these bridges. But also, look, why does the state want these bridges? You got to ask that question. Are we going to be putting tolls in? There's a lot of discussion that the state could make a lot of money by putting tolls on something that's not there. This is our local economy. We don't need things like that. So we got to be very careful, and I understand it, and I want to make sure that the taxpayers and the people who live in this district aren't going to be spending more money, as well as making sure that these things are going to be maintained appropriately.
All right. Tom Keyes, your turn to go first. We have a question from a listener who wants to know how you both feel about Donald Trump and the job he's doing. Tom Keyes, you're first.
Sure. Donald Trump, he's been a pretty amazing president, in my opinion. What he has done is he's given us the greatest economy we've all seen in our lives, certainly, but probably one of the best economies this country's ever seen. Now, here we are, we're going through a pandemic, and it's a real problem. Has he kept the stock market alive? Yes, he has. He's made some great moves with his cabinet. He's got a brilliant cabinet that knows how to manage dollars. If we were under a different president, who knows what the stock market would be doing? We could have a real challenge. We would have a pandemic that could turn into a serious depression. So is he doing a good job with this? He's doing the best he can do. These are uncharted territories. So as president of the United States, I think with this economy, kudos. He couldn't have asked for better.
Stephen Ivero, same question.
Donald Trump is our president. He's a Republican. I support him. I voted for him in 2016. I voted for him in the primary, and I plan on voting for him again. Do I wish he would say things a little differently or nicer? Yes. But do I stand by him? Yes. Do I think he's doing a great job? Yes, with his policies of the economy, keeping us safe, building a wall, having legal immigration, standing up for the police, standing up for our flag. Those are all real things. Those are issues that all Americans are concerned about. And, you know, my own personal story, I've actually been with President Trump 3 times. And it's pretty powerful when you get to speak with the president. And, you know, sadly, it's because I'm a Gold Star father. I lost my son fighting for this country. He came home in a flag-draped coffin. I've never seen him since I gave him his hug. And the president called to meet me. So I've been with President Trump on Memorial Day at our cemetery in Washington, Arlington National. We talked about Nick. Man to man, father to father. And then I was called back to be with him on Gold Star Family Night. So I brought my other son, Alex, who's a police officer, who I worry about every day. And that's why I have such a strong opinion and stance on law enforcement. We got to keep our people safe. I don't want to lose another son. But being with the president on that day, we talked about immigration. We talked about the flag. We talked about supporting veterans. That's a huge issue to me, and President Trump stands strong on all of those issues, and I'm not reading it. I'm not looking at it at Facebook. I actually did it face-to-face, and I hope to do it again after January.
Another question from a listener, Don in Sandwich, would like to know, how do you think the governor is handling the coronavirus pandemic? Do you agree with the governor's phased reopening plan? Stephen Ixeros first.
That's a difficult situation for our governor. And we have to go by science. And I've been on the front lines. I'm not an expert. Obviously, there's a lot to this. But it does affect us here on the Cape, not only business-wise. I had a businessman tell me, look, we're open with 100% of our bills, but we only have 50% of the business. That's in the summer. What's going to happen in the fall? You know, and so Governor Baker has his hands full. I support him during this crisis, but I'm not afraid to call him out when I think we should have done something different. I think we should have opened our businesses earlier, not only the restaurants, but our fitness areas. Those are different. You know, it's tough, but open them with all the conditions, keep our economy going the best we can, and remember, if those businesses fail, it affects our taxes, which affects the schools, which affects public safety, because there'll be a lack of money. So in general, I support Governor Baker. He's a Republican. He's got his hands full. I think he's done a pretty good job in this crisis. But he needs to know when something could be done differently. And he's open to that. And we do converse. And my job is to take care of the people of our district. There's 40,000 people that live here in the winter, and probably triple that at least in the summer. So those are my thoughts on Governor Baker. He's got a tough job, and we need to be able to converse back and forth to get through this crisis safely and as quickly as we can. And also, Cape Cod Hospital is ready to handle things. My fiance is a nurse there, and I helped get her the equipment she needed. And I think we're in a better position now than we were back in March when it first hit.
Thank you. Tom Keyes, same question.
Well, the governor just reversed course, and he stopped the transition of opening things back up. And I think that's bad. Yes, that can happen in certain areas. But why did he do that in Cape Cod? Think about this. Barnstable County has 2 major hospitals, Falmouth, you know, in Hyannis. There's not one single COVID patient being treated in those hospitals right now. Yet he just reversed course. We're in the middle of our summer. This is our livelihoods. And why would you just take a broad brush and paint Cape Cod this way, or paint the entire state this way? That was a bad move. And my opponent says he'll disagree with him when he thinks there's disagreement, but he should have disagreed with him on this one. There's a lot of businesses down here suffering. We have a lot of visitors. People need to make the money during the summer to get through the winter. Think about what's going to happen in the winter. We don't even know what's going to happen yet. But here we are. We slowed down the opening. That's a real problem. So when you ask how has the governor been doing on this, you can't just paint the entire state with a broad brush. We got Western Massachusetts, which is dramatically different from the Boston area. Same thing with Cape Cod. And the local boards of health should be making the determination just like they do on all other health aspects with all these businesses. As a selectman, I worked with the Board of Health for 6 years. The Board of Health regulates everything, everything in regards that can have an effect on human health. And why are we just letting Beacon Hill shut it down? If a business has a plan that works and people can be safe and it's been vetted by the local professional boards, then they should be open. They should be making money. But what the governor just did, that was bad policy. That was just wrong to reverse course on everybody.
All right, thank you. Another question from a listener, Tom Keyes. Marianne would like to know your views on the eviction moratorium. She says it's killing homeowners who are forced to provide free public housing. Tom Keyes?
Yeah. I mean, think about this. The eviction moratorium. So certainly, we have a pandemic, which is affecting everything. We certainly don't want people thrown out on the streets. So there's provisions put in place so that people cannot be evicted. We all understand that. But it doesn't go far enough, because the people that own these houses, own these apartment buildings, or have these mortgages, they still have to pay. So they may not live in themselves, but they got to pay that mortgage. You know, now someone's invested in a piece of property. They're renting one out while living in the other. Now that family now has two mortgages. Where's the bill for them? They're the ones that are getting hurt. These are the people that are paying big taxes. Remember, the renters aren't paying the local real estate taxes. It's the homeowners that own their house and a second house that they're renting out, and there's no provision to help them. That's a problem. It doesn't go far enough. I don't want to see people thrown out when we have a national pandemic. I think we've got other concerns there. But we need a bill that's going to go further and further, and it doesn't. So now we have families. And if you think about Cape Cod, there's a lot of people that have two homes, one's being rented so that they can actually make a little more money and get through the winters. Now what are they going to do? They're stuck with huge bills. And some of the renters that are out there aren't paying their bills because they realize that they can't be thrown out. This is a problem. This is a real problem. We need to reopen our economy. Think about this. If we reopen our economy, these bills, these restrictions on evictions for people that are doing wrong things and not paying the bills because they just weren't able or not willing to pay their bills, we need to reopen this economy immediately. That's my background. Let's get the economy going. We need to take my background as a business professional. We need to also take my background of understanding the municipalities and apply that so that we can get going. We've got to get our economy going.
All right, Stephen Exero, same question.
I've lived this world. As a police officer, we dealt with these issues right on the street level. So we have to provide housing. You know, when you see people living out in the woods like I have, a lot of them suffer from mental illness and drug addiction, but they're humans that are struggling. So it's a tough situation. I've also seen people abuse the system firsthand. So we need to provide housing. We need to protect our landlords. These people that are, you know, renting their properties legally, they have a hard time getting people that breaking the law or not paying the bill out. And I've seen it firsthand. And it puts a lot on the police to try to make those decisions. It becomes a civil issue most of the time. It's not a criminal issue. And people end up in court. So whatever we can do to try to make this process smarter, more efficient, but it's challenging because we're in the middle of this crisis. And I can see both sides of the issue. We need to take care of our people, but there are people that abuse the system, and we need to stand up for our property owners that give their life and blood sometimes to build those homes or rent those properties and make sure that it's done properly for the people that are living there. And we need to come up with something that addresses both sides.
All right, thank you. Stephen Xeros, we'll start with you this time. The Cape Cod Commission is looking how it might expand the 2018 regional policy plan to reduce carbon emissions and mitigate climate change rather than just adapting to it. How would you like to see the Cape take a step forward in reducing the carbon emissions that are produced here? You know, would you base it on transportation, building codes, renewables, land conservancy? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably a little bit of all those things. The Cape Cod Commission is here. They have a difficult job ahead. You know, our environment is so important. Our water supply is so important. I think one of the ways, or one of the most important things, is our water supply. So if that water supply gets contaminated, think what that would do to Cape Cod. Think what that would do to our tourism. And what do we do with wastewater? That's a huge issue. In the town of Yarmouth, where I worked for 40 years, the taxpayers shot that down. It's a huge money issue for wastewater. But we need to get it done. Probably countywide might be the best way. Some towns are doing it on their own. I know Sandwich and Bourne are looking at it. It's very expensive. So if the Cape Cod Commission could take a look at those issues, that's the future of Cape Cod. Our economy is based on tourism. Our health is based on the environment. Part of it is public safety, where, you know, as a police officer, we keep people safe. But you have to have a healthy living environment. And this is not just for next year. This is for the next 100 years. After we're gone, we want to make sure we live in a healthy, safe area and keep Cape Cod beautiful. It's a beautiful place to live. We need to keep it environmentally sound. We don't need to raise taxes to do it necessarily. We just have to do it smart and do it the best we can and deal with the issues of the future that keep us healthy and safe.
Thank you. Tom Keyes?
Okay, quickly. Look, my background on the county level is I reviewed the Cape Cod Commission on the Assembly of Delegates. I was also handpicked to be one of the members of the 21st Century Task Force to review the Cape Cod Commission so to make sure it's operating correct and focusing on the things that we need. Water Quality Review Committee on the town of Sandwich, you name it, I've been involved. I'm very much a conservationist, a fisherman, outdoors. I'm as solid on this as it gets. But with that said, right now is the last time or the worst time that we could be looking at new regulations on businesses and commerce. We have a serious problem in front of us. We have a $3 to $6 billion deficit at the State House. That means state aid is not going to be coming back for Chapter 70, Chapter 90, the things that affect the communities. Our kids are going to be affected. Our roadways are going to be affected. And the last thing we need to do is add another level of regulation on what we do, how we move, how we operate our businesses. I understand the issue as well as anybody. But right now, and probably for the foreseeable few years, when we get past this COVID devastation of our economy and jobs, we're going to have a real problem. This is not the time to do it. I'm certainly the person that understands it. But right now, I'd say no, no, no. We got to get people back to work. We got to get the economy up and running. We need to preserve jobs, keep these businesses from closing. The Isaac's example is just one. There is many examples of businesses not going to reopen. We have a real problem, and the last thing we want to do is even send out the message that we're going to add another level of regulation. I think the people of Cape Cod understand how precious this peninsula of ours is. We tread very lightly. At the same time, we also have to attract a lot of people here. So I'm not worried about the people of Cape Cod doing the right thing. I think they do the right thing, but we have to right now only do the right thing. Get
all right. Thank you, Tom. That's time. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Republican candidates running for state rep in the 5th Barnstable District, Thomas Keyes and Stephen Xeros. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Tom Keyes, we start with you this time. A listener wants to know what you plan to do about housing on the Cape, especially affordable housing for low-income people who live here or want to move to the Cape.
Yeah, that's something I did a lot of work with when I was on the Board of Selectmen. you know, we have a problem with what's called 40B, which is our affordable housing laws. That law doesn't allow us, unfortunately, to take existing stock, which is homes that are below the median household income and the opportunities. Oh, my battery's going low. And we need to actually take that law, adjust it so that existing houses, houses that were built, say, 15 years ago, that are within that opportunity window for people to afford and put a little sweat equity into it and build equity. The law doesn't allow that. It has to be only new home constructions for affordable housing. There's a lot of people out there that are building their lives, just got married, and they have a problem putting sweat equity into a property and gaining that. But right now, 40B means you have to buy a new house, and that house, when you go to sell it in the future, you cannot get the return, which is the equity. That's people's biggest investment in their lives is their home, and they can sell it in the future and cash out and do well and maybe retire to something smaller. Can't do that with affordable housing. I want the bill to be adjusted so that people can buy existing stock, maybe a small ranch house, get into it cheap. Maybe there's some subsidies to help them there, but then allow them to get that equity out of it. But it has to be controlled. We don't want anybody abusing this. But people need to have an opportunity to invest in themselves, invest in their blood, sweat, and tears so that they can build a family and get in. The law just, it doesn't work for us. There's ways we, and I did do that back in, I think it was 2004 or 5. We did it with an opportunity where there was property available worth almost $1 million. We actually got the developer to donate to the town the property's value. We actually turned that over to an organization that found homes and then put families into it. So instead of one house being built for one family.
Thank you, Tom. That's 2 minutes, Tom. Go ahead, Stephen Exero, same question.
Great question. Housing is so important. It's part of safety. It's part of healthy living. And imagine living out in the woods, as some people do. I've seen it firsthand. I think part of the answer is public-private combinations, such as taking existing properties like a motel and turning it into something legally safe for housing, or taking an old school like they're doing in Sandwich. The Sandwich taxpayers have spoken. They're going to take an old school. They're working with a private business and in a partnership in a way to create housing. People need a place to live. They need to be safe. They need to be affordable. And it can be done using innovative ways like they're doing in Barnstable with the new complex in Independence Park, like they're going to do in Sandwich, like they're doing in Bourne, and like they've done in Yarmouth. I saw it firsthand, where they took, dilapidated properties, built new ones in a public-private partnership, and people are living in there right now. So that's one way to do it. It's a big issue, not only to for people that here are retired to live, but also our workers. Our workers need places to live so they can take care of their families safely and provide services to all of us here on the Cape.
Thank you. Next, we start with you, Stephen, this time. As members of the minority party, how would you work to make Beacon Hill more transparent?
It should be very transparent to all of us. And unfortunately, I don't think it is. That's why it's important to work with all kinds of people. For instance, when George Floyd was killed by the police, and we all saw it on video, and made us sick and angry, what did I do? I held a beach, I had to be outside, but we went to Sandy Neck Beach and we said prayers and we had a vigil. And then 2 days later, we went to West Barnstable in a big parking lot and we had people from all walks of life, especially the minority community. We're all Americans. It doesn't matter what politics, it's about people. And I led both of those services with other people, and it was a way to try to heal. And everyone should have a voice on Beacon Hill. Things go on there every day that the average citizen doesn't know about. And the minority community needs to have a stronger voice. And I'll help do that. We're all one race here, the human race. And Beacon Hill doesn't tell us what to do all the time. We should have input, and it should be from people that have lived it, such as myself and a lot of my friends, that reach out to me because I've never been involved in politics. I'm not a seasoned campaigner, but I'm a lifetime public servant. And my friends come to me, even some that are in the minority community, and ask me how to get involved, and we will.
Thank you, Tom Keyes.
Transparency is critical. Look, I'm the only candidate that's been asking for the Speaker of the House to have term limits. It's Speaker for life up there. And when you have somebody in that type of a seat with that kind of power, you're not going to have transparency. Everything's going to be done behind closed doors, like exactly what happens up at Beacon Hill. They bundle things into bills. Nobody gets a chance to read them unless there's maybe 24 hours to read it. Things need to be posted for the public to read before the legislators get a chance to vote on it. But actually, more than that, they need to post it so that the legislators get a chance to actually read it. These are large bills. I don't think this is all being vetted appropriately. And you look at, as a two-term selectman, also on many, many, many boards and committees, all boards and committees, whether you're elected or appointed, are subject to the open meeting law. And that open meeting law protects the public to make sure that the public knows what's going on in there and what the outcomes are and what the votes are in recording the votes. But guess what? Guess who's exempt? The state legislature exempts themselves from the open meeting law. And tell me that's not egregious. We don't have the right to see the outcomes. We don't have the right to see how they're making law. It's incredible. So, yeah, am I going to vote for transparency? You better believe it, I am. I'm also an ethics and compliance officer. I'll be the only one of those up in the legislature, that's for sure. So, transparency, that's right in my wheelhouse.
I want to give you each a minute for this next question so we have enough time for closing comments. But one of the reasons Randy Hunt decided not to seek re-election, he cited the loss of civil discourse in the public arena about political things. Tom, what are your thoughts on that?
Civil discourse. As someone famously said, politics isn't beanbag, right? And if you are in the legislature, you're an elected official, and you vote some way that's going to rub some people wrong, well, you're going to hear about it. And you need to stand up for the votes that you take. Randy Hunt right now is actually in a lot of trouble for voting for the TCI bill just two Fridays ago. And that's going to raise gas tax up to 17 cents per gallon. Why would he do such a thing like that? And then just a couple of weeks ago, he went online on his official representative Facebook page and posted a picture of a constituent and her personal handwritten letter and sent it out to the entire world chastising her. That's egregious. She's a senior citizen.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Let's give Stephen a place before we go to the closing comments. Go ahead, Stephen.
It is a tough world out there. Social media has let people speak out. And me, as a police officer for over 40 years, I'm used to that. You know, I led the social media for our department. We had over 50,000 followers, and there are negative comments. And you have to be able to address them by being transparent, having integrity. Not everybody's going to agree with what you do. But what we found and what I found is if you're honest and approachable, people will understand why you did what you did. And that's the key, working with people, communicating, and standing strong, but letting them know why you did what you did.
All right, we're going to go to closing statements now. And Stephen Exeros, you are first.
Awesome. Thank you. This has been awesome. It's a little difficult when you're not face-to-face, but I loved it. Thank you. Thank you, Mindy, and everybody on the point for listening. I am Steve Exeros. And as you've heard, the reason for my campaign is endorsed by so many state reps, two sheriffs, numerous local officials, and leading public servants and community leaders. It's all about people and experience. My experience uniquely qualifies me to be the capable conservative leader of the 5th Barnstable District as our next state rep. Who better than me, a deputy chief of police with 5 decades of law enforcement experience, to be your voice for law and order in a world that so desperately needs it. While others may turn their back on our police, I fight to support the police and all first responders. It's in my blood. I will respect the rule of law and oppose dangerous policies like sanctuary cities. I will make sure we put violent criminals and drug dealers behind bars and keep them there. I'm also well known for my charity work in memory of my son, Nick, who was born and bred here on Cape Cod and came home in a flag-draped coffin at age 21. I'll continue to give back to the community. It's who I am. I'm also a proud Republican and a proven leader. I will fight for lower taxes, less regulations, and keeping tolls off our bridges, and I'll stand up and hold Beacon Hill accountable. It would be my honor to be a next state representative, and I respectfully ask for your vote now or leading up to September 1st. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Keyes.
Thank you, Minnie, for hosting this debate. This is an important race for the future. If you want someone who has the experience to revive the economy and put people back to work, then I'm your candidate. If you want someone who knows how to balance budgets, then I'm your candidate. If you want to hold the line against tax increases, then I'm your candidate. If you want to stop Massachusetts from being a sanctuary state and stop licenses for illegal immigrants, then I'm your candidate. If you want someone who will be an independent voice for you, not a voice of the insiders, then I'm your candidate. And I would be honored to have your vote. And if people would like more information, they can please go visit votetomkeyes.com.
Thank you both, Tom Keyes and Stephen Xeros. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and letting listeners know where you stand on the issues. Sorry we couldn't be in person. I want to mention if you missed any part of the debate this morning, it will be available on our website, capeandislands.org. Thank you and good luck to you both.
Thank you, Mindy. Thank you, Tom. Have a great day, everybody.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.